97.5, The Fanatic.
What up?
Fanatic. I'm your host, Hunter Brody. I have you covered until 8 o'clock tonight. Sixers basketball. Sixers, Timberwolves, Joel Embiid. It's fascinating. Questionable right now. We'll keep you updated on what it says on these injury reports moving forward, but seems like you'll be in front of those fans, hopefully. Nat Marlowe on the other side of the glass. I want to start here today. The Philadelphia Phillies are in action. Rhys Hoskins just struck out looking with bases juiced. Oh, we could have blew it away. Although the Phillies are up nice thanks to Zach Wheeler. But when watching these first two games, I'm big with, especially early in the season, I try and find out the identity of a team. What can possibly be the identity of the team? You're really not going to know two games in a 162-game season, and that's understandable. But it's more so, what can I snag out of this? Is there anything? Is there something that I can keep my eye on, which then, you know, somewhat tells a story? Maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks into the season, I dive back to what I saw in the first two games. I go, aha, there was something to this. So seeing them beat the Braves in game one, watching them grind down Fried, I really thought there was something to the top six hitters in their lineup. McCutchen, Reese, Bryce, JT, Boom, Didi. Where's the breathing room if you're on the other side? If you're on the bump, where do you catch that breath? Adam Haseley or Roman Quinn? Gene Segura maybe? Okay. And if we get the Gene Segura of years past, that's not so much a breathing room. He hit over 300 3 years in a row when he was with Seattle. And hopefully, I mean, he hit 280 the first year here with the Phillies. That's doable. I'm okay with that. I'm very satisfied with that if that's in your seven type of hole here in your lineup. 260 or so last season. I would like more out of Gene Segura. But look, he started off the season with the walk-off. There seems to be a little bit of swagger with Gene Segura right now. So hopefully that's what you get out of him. But you don't need him to be what he once was a few years ago in the two hole. So it's a different mentality. It's a different approach. And he did want to walk up to the plate when Didi got intentionally walked yesterday. So I talk about the swag. Maybe there's something to it. But my point is, I'm looking for an identity with this team. And it's real early in the season. But what can I grab? And there is something to this grinding out pitcher mentality. And I just see how much it's going to be painful for the other side when you're facing these type of batters and what they can do professionally. You know, Didi the other day in game one, he had a lot of strikeouts and it wasn't beautiful looking by any means, but he still put together at bats where you had to throw a ton of pitches. You had to work. You had to earn it. That's what you're going up against with this Phillies team. I haven't seen enough of the bullpen to really have a full educated thought on it. You did see Archie Bradley, and the Jose Alvarado experience is going to be something that's emotionally, it's going to be an emotional roller coaster, ups and downs. And it's also hard when you see Nola and Wheeler throw. You somewhat know what you're going to get out of these guys. It's more so, what does the team look like when it's Eflin, Moore, Anderson? How is your bullpen going to be looking if they only go five innings or so, specifically Moore and Anderson? You knew what the Flyers were, by the way, last season, just to put it in perspective here with the identity of things. You knew last season, you don't know now, but you knew last season, they were going to establish the forecheck. That's who they were. They're going to dump the puck in. They're going to get on you. They're going to beat you to loose pucks. They're going to win your stick battles. They'll be a little bit physical in the corners to make sure they come out with the puck. Their identity was the forecheck. The Sixers defense right now, that's their identity. They're going to grind you out in the half-court sets. Good luck with Matisse Thybulle, with Joel Embiid, with Ben Simmons. It's a special talent defensively. That's their identity. Right now, I'm sitting here and thinking there's something to the top six or so of this batting order, and that possibly can be the identity of this Philadelphia Phillies team. I'm just so excited, though, to finally have them back. It's almost like I'm in awe. As we dive deeper into the season, you're in series five or six. it hits you and you realize, okay, we're somewhat understanding what this team is and all that. You've seen enough baseball where you've digested it. We haven't digested it yet, so it's just the entertainment of hearing the crowd, hearing the boos at the umpire, and when Zach Wheeler puts together a phenomenal at-bat, he goes the other way with it to knock in more runs that he already knocked in earlier. You're adding to it that Zach Wheeler excitement, the fans, all that. I'm numb to it right now. I'm numb to it, and I can't wait to continue to grind through this season and watch them play. We've seen them have historic fails at the back stretch of seasons, and we've seen them start out strong, so there is a little bit of that in play here where we need to recognize that, yeah, so we've seen them be good against the Braves early in the season, and that meant nothing by August. That meant nothing by September. So keep that in the back of your mind. But Nat, where are you here with possibly what this Phillies team can be?
With what this Phillies team can be, as long as the bullpen has made some sort of significant improvement, which on paper totally has, then the sky is the limit with this Philadelphia Phillies team. Especially if you can do some serious damage early, which at least at the moment they're doing to the Braves right now. Now, it's only two games in. It's a long season. Long season. But it can't get much worse than what your bullpen was last year. What did you say last week? The second worst bullpen
in MLB history.
That is atrocious. You can't have that this year. No other option but to improve. That was more than likely going to happen anyway, because you can't get much worse than second worst in MLB history. But still, my point being, if you can make those significant changes on paper, and if the bullpen actually does what it should do, on paper, this team should be a playoff team. Yeah, every other team, their division improved, but the Phillies didn't have to do much. I mean, I believe you had Ricky Bo on last week, and Ricky Pitalico said, look, there wasn't a whole lot that they needed to do to that top nine, to the starting nine. There, a lot of what they had to do was to the bullpen. So if anything, fewer moves to the batting rotation, doing fewer changes to what you're going to have in your outfield, that was almost the biggest move that the Phillies could have done, because you absolutely needed to fix not necessarily the pitching rotation, but that bullpen. You absolutely needed to fix it.
Well, I think that's where everybody goes, right? We needed a better bullpen from last year. That's obvious, and I think you got that. But I don't know if that's definitely going to be what your team's MO is. You might just have an average bullpen. But the fact that we went from an absolute disaster just to average, does that mean your bullpen is what makes your team what your team is? If I'm looking for what makes this team, what is going to be, when you look at it at the end of the day, the Phillies were good because of X. Are we going to sit here and say they're good because of their bullpen, or they're good because their offense and the structure of their top six? I would lean towards the lineup being the reason why, but we are probably all going to be naturally drawn to the bullpen because that was your disaster last year. But even if they go from disaster to average, does that make it your MO? Or is it, once again, does it relate back to you're good because your offense, because you have to have your opposing pitcher? For example, you grind through Fried, right? Fried probably didn't have the day that he wanted to have in game one. So you go to the bullpen. And now that game two changes because you went to your bullpen earlier with your number one guy. Then game three of the series changes if you grind out their second pitcher, and now you got to go to your bullpen earlier again, where that right there, and it's too early to know, but I'm putting that in the back of my mind. I'm putting a pin in it because I think that truly can be. I really do. I think that can be the difference in this team succeeding or not succeeding.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of a combination between this Phillies offense will just grind other teams out. The starting pitching is just going to grind other teams out, wear them down. And I think it's also going to be a combination of that Phillies team was so tainted last year by the bullpen. I think a lot of people, only if they win the World Series this year, I think a lot of people are going to make at least part of the MO of this Philadelphia Phillies team, they had a better bullpen than the year before. Yeah. I think it's inevitable. But only if they win the World Series. If they don't win the World Series, then it's just going to be, I don't want to say a throwaway year, but you know, another season we're just going to put in the back of our minds and say, hey, remember when they drastically improved the bullpen? I think that is going to be not necessarily a huge part of it, but because of what happened last season, it's definitely going to be a part of this Philadelphia Phillies team and what we think of the MO is.
Well, I don't think anyone's going to sit here today and put World Series expectations on this team. As much as they're beating up the Braves right now, I still put them at the top of the division talent-wise. We talk about the depth of this Phillies roster in the lineup. They can match that too, right? Freddie Freeman, Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, Ozuna. When these guys get going and get a bit more in rhythm and they see legitimate pitching more and they get accustomed to the season and you're somewhat in that groove when you're in the batter's box, you'll see a different Braves team for sure. And same with their pitching. And same with the Phillies, though, to be fair. You'll see a Bryce Harper that's even more engaged and a Rhys Hoskins that might not miss a meatball down the pipe. I'll give him credit. In this game today, he did have a nice hit to knock in some runs down the right side or down the third base side, the left side of the field. But on a 1-1 pitch, he missed one that would have been a grand slam. The old Rhys Hoskins, the Rhys Hoskins we saw in the beginning of his career, that one would have been a moonshot and he would have had a grand salami. This year and even last year's version of Rhys Hoskins, you're missing it down the pipe. That's got to change.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with Rhys Hoskins the rest of the season, as we'll see with all these guys. But if they have a healthy Zach Wheeler through the entire season, I can pay dividends throughout the season.
Well, that's what makes me real curious about this team. Because we know what Aaron Nola is. He's going to be fantastic, and he'll give you that little hiccup along the way. Maybe an 0-2 pitch to Sandoval that he probably shouldn't have missed his location as bad as he did, but he sure did. Nola's going to be terrific. He'll give you a lot of strikeouts. The off-speed pitches will be beautiful. He'll get guys swinging and missing, and he's really good finessing it. That's what he does. He can finesse anyone up at the dish. But he'll give you that mistake too. And he'll give you a couple mistakes. Realistically, if it wasn't for the wind, Swanson would have went yard, Freeman would have went yard, and Pablo would have went yard. And maybe we have a different outlook on what Aaron Nola was in that game in game one. But I feel we can all lay down what Nola is realistically going to give you each night, what Zach Wheeler is going to give you each night. What are you going to get the three other days when it's Zach Eflin? And I like Zach Eflin. I'm excited for Zach Eflin. I haven't seen Zach Eflin yet. What's Matt Moore? What's Chase Anderson? And then we can dive into, all right, we've seen a couple innings of the bullpen, but what is it going to look like 3-4 times through your starting rotation when maybe the back end of the starting rotation guys only give you 5 innings? Then you have more usage of Jose Alvarado, who's all over the place, and he's an emotional ride. And I don't know what Archie Bradley really is yet. So that's when we're going to have a different outlook on this bullpen. Just too raw right now to really know.
And we're talking about identity in this show, but you mentioned Aaron Nola and the win yesterday. If the win doesn't help Nola out, does your initial opinion on the potential identity of this team change at all after one game?
No, not necessarily, because one of 162 is insane. And I think we have sort of that 60-game mentality still in us because it's been, I know it was only 1 year of that happening, but it's been 2 years now, really, since we've seen 162. So it's sort of like the transition period from Eagles football to Sixers basketball. We're so accustomed in the beginning of fall to have 16 games that mean so much because it's only one of 16, so they're so valuable, that when October comes around and it's Sixers basketball, the first 2, 3, 4 games, you treat it the same way that you do an Eagles game because you're in that mentality of these games matter so much. So you naturally apply it that way. I think there's this transition period with watching the Phillies of 162 again where, all right, one game is so tiny, insanely tiny, out of the full season, if that makes sense. So, no, I don't think it would have changed the way I felt long-term about it. But you do raise an interesting point. Because the Phillies did have a 2-0 lead. They blew the 2-0 lead. It's 2-2. Would have there been a, not a mental breakdown by any means, but knowing what last year's problems were, what if their bullpen came in allowed the lead to go in the favor of the Braves, and then you lost game one the same way you lost so many games last year. How would that toy with the mental side of the clubhouse after game one? Not that that would be a defining moment by any means, but there's no way it would be a good feeling.
No, not at all, especially with how disastrous last year's season was. And, I mean, Aaron Nola, we all have, or at least we all want to have faith in Aaron Nola, but the win yesterday, I mean, you mentioned earlier, that really helped him out. And I think our opinions of him in that game really change if the win wasn't a factor into it. In fact, who knows? Maybe the Phillies would have been down for most of the game if the win didn't help the Phillies in the pitching out that day.
Well, to be fair, Bryce Harper could have had an opposite field bomb, too, that was held in due to the win. So there's
some of that would have helped out
the Phillies as well if there was no win. But you're right. There was a big factor involved with that. I loved what I saw even defensively from game one. But if we're looking for that identity, I don't think defense is going to be this team's identity, even though that they were really good. Rhys Hoskins made a pretty big error. That was the worst play of the game in game one. Boom in the sixth inning. Magnificent play. The 6'5 body frame definitely helped. Didi Gregorius, when Hector Neris was in there in the ninth inning with that over-the-shoulder catch, that was beautiful.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it really was. And Roman Quinn, what he did to get thrown in there late after Adam Haseley left the game, and he had a nice hit against a lefty, just throwing that out there. So it looked like Joe Girardi spoke. Nothing too serious. You'll see Adam Haseley pretty soon again. But Roman Quinn's defense was electric. That throw to JT Realmuto. And the way JT Realmuto applied it as well, that was awesome. I don't know, though, if that's going to be who they are every night. Because, quite frankly, heading into the season, I had concerns about the defense as maybe one of their weaker spots, more so than something I can put my hat on and think this is going to be a thing that helps them out. I think it might actually be a downfall of the team, more so than a positive. But who knows? Maybe I get proven wrong. If this is any indication from what I saw in game one, well, then I would be wrong. But, you know, we'll have to see more of that explosiveness on the defensive end.
So do you just want them to avoid that being their identity, or you want to more so be proven wrong and see if they actually take that into effect?
I don't need them to be great and special defensively. They just can't be a disaster. My problems really came down to Andrew McCutchen out in left field. I just don't know, because of the injury and the age, although he tagged up from third base and it looked like he had a nice giddy up in his step running home to score the first run of the season yesterday. So that was very valuable to me. I don't know what you have in center field when Roman Quinn's playing. Yes, he's fast, but I mean, is he the smartest fielder in the world? Not necessarily. Alec Boehm has a ton of question marks, and Rhys Hoskins has a ton of question marks. I don't need them to be insanely fantastic elite defensive team. What they need to be, though, is just not bad and not give the other team more opportunities by making mistakes, limit those errors kind of defense. That's what I need out of them.
Just don't screw up.
Exactly.
That's all you have to do. Don't mess up.
That's perfect. That's a perfect way to explain it. Do not mess up. So there's really three things so far this season that stand out to me. It's the defense. It's the way that they play with their first six hitters in the lineup. They are grinding through and really making you work. And it's a little bit of the bullpen as well, because they did have some nice outings with Connor Brogdon, with Hector Neris, with Alvarado, who got out of it. I'm not going to say that was a nice performance at him, but he at least got out of it. Is there something in this bullpen now that you have more realistic pieces in there compared to last year? And as much as I couldn't stand Matt Klentak and all, when you think about Brandon Workman and what he did last year, the fact that you bring in guys that actually had good numbers in Boston, hey, let's bring them over here to help out this disaster bullpen, and it even gets worse. How does that happen? I mean, it really is unexplainable. You bring in a guy who a year ago had a sub-2 ERA, and it clearly would benefit your bullpen to have that type of player, and he comes in, and he might be the worst bullpen pitcher in the MLB that season. That just shows you exactly where the Phillies were last year. With whatever they picked up, whatever they acquired, it would not work out. There's just no way the baseball gods would allow it.
Well, this leads me to ask this question. It's another identity question. Is it more important for the bullpen to change their identity more than anything else, as opposed to this Phillies team establishing a solid identity right out of the gate?
Yeah, because to answer your question, I see where you're taking this. the Phillies' offense was fine last year. So in terms of their improvement, there's not going to be as much of a gap. The bullpen gap needs to be insanely improved, but I date it back to if you have a below-average bullpen with the offense last year, you might be making the playoffs. And if that's the case, if this team squeaks in and actually makes the playoffs with a below-average bullpen, but their offense carries them, it wouldn't be the bullpen is their identity. It would be, hey, their offense is cruising and they're doing what they need to do, which is tap into the opposing team's bullpen and get timely hits. That's one thing they did not get in game one. They did not get timely hits. They had a lot of traffic on base. But my theory is, if you're going to constantly get that traffic on base, it'll work itself out. The numbers will show you over time, hey, we are going to be able to get that production we're looking for offensively. The more attempts, you'll probably be able to knock them in more often.
Well, that and with the improved bullpen, the way the, I mean, there's, again, there's no other choice but for this team to improve. I mean, they're going to improve. Like, is it too much to say that this team is going to improve based off like how much the bullpen has alone?
Yeah, it will. The problem is other teams did too, right? I mean, the Mets have gotten on paper. We don't know how it's going to play out, but they've gotten significantly better on paper. We can agree with that.
Well, the New York Mets, like, how likely is it that they're going to New York Met this?
I always feel that way. You always date back to the Mets are the Mets and they're going to Mets. But when you get a fresh new regime, I'll relate this to the Sixers. All right. They had a problem before they brought in Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers because there were people internally making basketball decisions and they were making poor decisions. And it was a problem. It was one of the reasons why they were a disaster. Well, they changed that and then they became what? This team that we look at as a possible championship team in 1 year? That doesn't mean I feel the Mets are making that much of a significant jump the same way the Sixers did. But my point is when you start changing internally, that's where everything changes. And that's why Eagles fans right now, what do they want? They want front office changes. Why? Because when you change front office type of moves, that's when the snowball effect happens and what you see on the field, on the ice, on the diamond, on the court, all of that changes. Once you change upstairs.
And all four of these teams right now, how much can change in a year? And all four of these teams have proven, at least so far, a lot.
Unfortunately,
it's like night and day with all of them.
Yeah, unfortunately for some of them, it went in the wrong direction.
Yeah, half in the wrong direction, half in the right direction. Or at least with the Phillies so far, in the right direction. Sixers for sure in the right direction. And I mean, the Eagles and the Flyers, I mean, we all know what's going on with them right now.
It's crazy.
Unfortunately.
It's painful.
Yeah.
It's definitely painful.
You know, we're Philadelphia sports fans. We do this to ourselves all the time.
Yeah, so, you're not wrong.
Yeah, we're here for the ride, no matter how torturous it is.
That's what makes us so special. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975 is the phone number to climb into the conversation. The Philadelphia Phillies. What is their identity going to be? And how exciting is it? I'm just giddy. Giddy's the perfect word to explain how I feel watching this team play and how I feel watching baseball back. I got MLB TV. I got three TVs in my basement, and I'm going Padres, Diamondbacks, late night. I got the Seattle Mariners on with their crazy games. I'm just all baseballed up, and it puts a smile on my face.
Got the PS5 connected to one computer. You have the computer connected to your one TV.
So I go.
You're hooked up all over the place.
Yeah,
aren't you?
I go through the Roku TV sticks. So I just got all that through through the Xfinity app. So I got cable and all the TVs. Bang, bang, bang. We're switching through MLB apps. You name it.
You're rolling.
Oh yeah, NHL Game Center app. I'm locked and loaded every single night. 610-632-0975. I'm Hunter Brody, and this is 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. In a world of division, we bring people together. 97.5 The Fanatic.
The Fanatic. I'm Broads. have you covered until 8 o'clock, Sixers basketball. Can't wait for that. Can't wait to see how they play after that 4-2 road trip. Ben Simmons, what happened to him? He has looked a mess.
Uh-oh.
I don't understand. It blows my mind. By the way, this weekend's programming is brought to you by Citadel. By the way, when I look at Ben Simmons over the last few games, that right there. That's the perfect way to explain, especially what I saw against the Cleveland Cavaliers. What was that? 2-for-11, by the way. And don't tell me, because people are trying to sell everyone that at least he was aggressive, he just couldn't finish. I'm a patient guy. I'm someone that understands in sports, you need to grow. You need to develop. It takes time for you to really become, especially the NBA. You go from a kid in college to a grown man's league against 30-year-old men that are tough, bigger, stronger, faster. There's an adjustment. I just feel at this point, real quick, at this point, Ben, this whole like, hey, at least he was downhill. I'm done with the at least he was downhill. He should already know by now that downhill and finishing is something that he has to do more consistently. That's my point.
Well, do you feel like Ben Simmons is kind of plateaued for this season at least? Anything it could be a problem later on down the line?
I don't even know how to describe it, because in the beginning of the year, he was terrible. He was not good enough, and everyone put it up to the point with, hey, look what Doc Rivers is doing. It's a new team. It's a new philosophy. It's a new offense. So why don't we give him time to work on his game with the new team? And Doc went with the philosophy of just allow him to go be him. Ben, go make the plays. Go facilitate. Hit your open guys. And Doc was very clear with this message. I don't care how you get the points. Get the points. I don't care if it comes from Ben. I don't care if it comes from Danny Green. I don't care if it comes from the three-point shooters, Joel Embiid, Furkan Korkmaz. He doesn't care how it happens. Just make it happen. And I'm not downplaying that, but I do feel when you allow Ben to just do whatever he wants, that's when you get this out-of-control Ben, the 7-turnover Ben, the I-don't-feel-like-attacking Ben, and I can't have that. So when I look at his season as a whole, it started out poor, then there was the stretch before the All-Star break where he wanted to prove to everyone he's an All-Star, and he did that. He was playing magnificent basketball. And then now, without Joel, he went back to the shell of himself, and I don't know what to do with that information.
Well, here's my main concern. I'm concerned if they switch their game plan and tailor it more towards Ben Simmons, I feel like you're going to get more of what this Sixers team was last year as opposed to the damage that they can actually do in the playoffs this year. So I love the fact that Ben Simmons is actually in a little bit, I don't want to say a smaller role, but he has more of a set role than anything else, where he doesn't have to be like one of the big guys every single night. It's nice when he does become one of the big guys in certain games, but I don't need him to be one of the top guys every single night, because I love what the bench is doing. I love what guys like Danny Green provide to this team with the way everyone's roles have worked out. I think Doc has really figured that out, but you're right. Ben Simmons at times has looked invisible in not so good ways.
And I'm not disagreeing with your mindset here. You're basically saying, with the way this team is constructed, Joel Embiid being the MVP, Tobias Harris being that phenomenal second piece that has been a good Robin to Joel, the spacing of Danny, the professionalism of Danny and Seth Curry, Dwight Howard playing a nice role, you don't need Ben to be the player that we demanded him to be in years past because the squad is constructed differently. Is that what you're basically saying?
Kind of, yeah. It's almost like, If anything, I don't necessarily want Ben to be the guy, but one of the guys. Now, different sport, but it worked with Phil Kessel when he got traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, he was the guy with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Then he goes to Pittsburgh, where he becomes just one of the guys and helps them win two cups in a row. Again, different sport, but I think you can apply that same type of mentality when it comes to Ben Simmons' game. I think if you focus on him being one of the guys and having him be that facilitator where he can contribute on every single play, that's where I think you really can get the most out of Ben Simmons. But sometimes he does have his off nights, even when the Sixers win. And I want Ben to finish more, because I think if you can make Ben Simmons the perfect slash complete player, and we all go to the jump shot. Yes, he doesn't have a jump shot, and he hasn't perfected in mid-game. And that's one thing I feel like even he doesn't necessarily need to do that. If he does do it, he will be the perfect complete player. And I don't want to say it will hinder the Sixers in the playoffs, because personally, I don't think it will, but it has the potential to. And that can cause you enough problems as it is, especially like if they tune into all of that noise and that negative impact, because some fans with Ben Simmons, I mean, we had a guy call up the other night and he said, why is Doc Rivers starting Mike Scott? Of all players, Mike Scott. They won by 20 and all he wanted to do was complain about Mike Scott. That was it. So things like that can hinder players, or it can affect the mindset of certain fans, even when the Sixers are playing extremely well to where they're playing now. I mean, the amount of Ben Simmons haters we get every single day.
Well, it's just because it's so frustrating. I don't think it's going to be a problem in the playoffs. It can be, as you said. The reason why I don't think it will be is because you have someone like Joel Embiid. If you don't have Joel Embiid, you're absolutely screwed, and Ben Simmons' flaws are way more noticeable. The attention that Embiid is going to draw might allow Ben Simmons to have a little bit more open space. If he's hanging out in the dunker spot and you have to double Joel Embiid, or you got to double someone like Tobias, you might be having a really nice stretch in the fourth quarter, which he has done this season. Maybe that allows Ben Simmons to cut, or maybe Ben Simmons is being the screener and you're rolling to the basket, or something of that nature, where just adding Joel back on the floor changes the whole dynamic of what this team runs offensively and how other teams have to defend you, that it's not going to be the version that you've seen of Ben Simmons without Joel on the floor. But I just ask this question. When Joel isn't there, when you're Ben Simmons, how do you not have a different sense of urgency? How do you not have a different game? How do you not look in the mirror and say, I want to prove to everybody that there's a different version of me. Without Joel, I can be this player, this version. He does show it once in a blue moon, and he does show, maybe once in a blue moon's a little strong. He does show it throughout the regular season.
But at the same time,
but not enough.
Yeah, you never exactly know what you're going to get out of Ben Simmons each and every single night. With Joel Embiid, you know what you're getting out of him this season, each and every single night he's on the court. You know exactly what you're, that MVP level style of play. Now, tonight, returning from the injury, we'll see. But up until this point, you knew what you're getting out of Joel. You don't always know what you're going to get out of Ben Simmons every game.
And that's a problem. And if I'm him, and the difference is, yeah, expectations are different. For the people that think Ben Simmons is just a guy and Ben Simmons is just a random player and we're putting too much expectations on him and we need to somewhat dial it back a bit, I disagree with that completely. We're not demanding Furkan Korkmaz to go out there and drop 30 every night. We're not demanding TJ McConnell to be a player that scores 20 and gives you five steals and is this crazy player. We're demanding Ben Simmons to be the version that we see at his best because we know it's in there. And the only reason why he's not doing it is nothing. It has nothing to do with skill set. It has nothing to do with any, like, yes, he needs a jump shot, but we've seen him give you 28, 12, and 8 without the jump shot. What the difference is when he's not giving you that style of play is nothing other than the mentality. It's not the physical skill. It's the mentality. So why some days are you mentally prepared to be that and other days you're not? That is what crushes me inside.
Well, when you mention mentality, this kind of goes back to what you mentioned in your first segment about identity. Maybe Ben Simmons doesn't know what his identity or role is on this Philadelphia 76ers team when it's time for a player like him to step up. I think he knows what his role is when the starting five is all there, when Joel Embiid is on the court. But when Joel is out, I don't think he knows how to transition from
role to role.
I think it potentially be a problem, absolutely. Come playoff time, let's say Embiid gets injured and they're in a game seven. What the heck is going
to
happen?
Well, to be fair, if that ended up happening, I think it would be, I don't know, is it too strong for us to demand Ben Simmons at that point too? I know some will because the way he's paid, the way he was drafted, maybe you would. I just think if Joel Embiid, if that hypothetical comes up that you just mentioned, you're screwed. You're done. You have no chance. So while I would want Ben Simmons to step up there, realistically, that scenario, I'm heartbroken just based off of the circumstance and how it played out to begin with, more so than screaming at Ben Simmons. Although I know that's probably more of the outlier thought process because there would be people screaming that it's time to trade him. You know what's going to happen if they fail this year. We're going to go through the same offseason of this guy needs to get out of here. You missed your chance with James Harden. You got to call someone for Bradley Beal. That's what you're going to get if they fail due to the flaws of Ben Simmons for another straight season in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, you remember all the Ben Simmons trade rumors that happened pretty much right after Daryl Morey got here and all the trade rumors that occurred before or just up to the point of the James Harden trade deadline. They weren't really happening for the Kyle Lowry trade rumors going on. It was more so guys like Matisse, Maxey, draft picks. Ben Simmons wasn't really thrown around in trade talks. Do you think there was more so a change in fan mindset about Ben Simmons because of what fans think he can provide to this team?
Well, I think at that point, you understood Kyle Lowry wasn't going to take a Ben Simmons. So it really is what you were trying to approach. You knew it wasn't a James Harden, it wasn't a Bradley Beal, it wasn't a player of that nature. So the reason why the expectations weren't a Ben Simmons is because you knew you could get Kyle Lowry with the contract expiring. You wouldn't need a Ben Simmons. But I do think that intensifies if this season ends up falling the way that it has fell in previous years. And with Daryl Morey being at the top of this, I wonder if this is almost a tryout for Ben Simmons with Daryl Morey. And let's be realistic. If they get to the third round, if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals and fail, does that mean Ben Simmons fails as a player and he won't look at that as a positive step? He might. Daryl Morey might. But I do feel that this is almost a prove it to me, Ben, from a Daryl Morey perspective. Prove it to me that you deserve to be on this team because I can. Well, now James Harden got traded, so it's different. But maybe you can make a trade for a Bradley Beal with Ben Simmons. Maybe he does pull the trigger and make some sort of splash because we know he's not afraid to do it. I'm just curious. Will the outcome of this year change the way that Daryl Morey attacks this offseason?
See, but I think Doc Rivers is asking Ben Simmons to do less. Because he's not really focused on Ben Simmons' shooting or putting up.
Let me counter that real quick.
Okay.
So you do that because of Ben's flaws. If you trade him for Bradley Beal, you can then demand Bradley Beal to give you what you're lowering the expectations for Ben Simmons. So you're not asking Ben Simmons to do X because he can't do X. So if you trade for Bradley Beal and he can do that X, you now have that player that can do it. Though you are now losing defense. You're losing that identity of what this team is built around. But who's to say that they don't go with a new version of themselves for next year? And hey, we wanted to go with defense, but we know in this league, scoring wins. We want to be able to go toe-to-toe with Brooklyn. We want to get more lethal scoring. We want to be maybe a team that can outscore you instead of out-defend you. Or a good combination of both. A combination of really good defense and good scoring that might be able to overpower just a bad defensive team in Brooklyn that has lethal scoring. Maybe that's the way they look at it.
So do you want Ben Simmons to take that initiative primarily or almost entirely on himself to make that next step forward? Or do you think it's more so the responsibility of Doc Rivers to put that on him, to make that next big step, or to even put him in a different role on this team?
Well, you got to want it. And I don't think the role that Ben Simmons is playing is a bad role when this team is healthy. So I don't think it has to do with the role of him when everyone is available, like Tobias, like Joel Embiid. That's not the case. So
I mean, Tobias has stepped his game up.
Yeah, definitely. It comes from within. So for me, I always look at the players more than anybody else. You want to blame a coach for an out-of-bounds play. You want to blame a coach for this and that. Okay. I look at, and there's times where that is warranted. There's times where that's fair. Absolutely. There's 1 second left. You get a bad look. And while the players have to execute it, I'll look at that part first. If the play design wasn't that trash and the player's execution was bad, well, then I change my thought process on it all. But I always look at players first. So if you're asking me, where does this come? This, when we look at Ben Simmons, that next step, is it a Doc Rivers thing? Is it a scheme thing? It's a Ben Simmons thing. It is a full-on Ben Simmons thing that he needs to want it. And it does seem like some nights he wants it and other nights he doesn't want it. And it really does hurt me inside because I love everything about Ben. The fact that there are some fans that don't see what he can be and what his skill set is, that's ridiculous. Like the speed, the IQ, the passing, the defense, all assets of his game, like all these attributes of his game that stand out to such a crazy level at 6'10", the way that he dribbles the ball at 6'10", it doesn't make sense. It's special. But there's something missing. And I feel by now, in his career, we should at least seen a big enough jump to satisfy us where we see a path. That's what I demand. And I said this with the Eagles. I need to see the path. So you might not like their execution side of things, and I'm with you. I don't feel confident either. I heard Rob Motti before me talk about it throughout his whole show. I agree with him completely. I like what the Eagles did, and I'm also skeptical of step two of this process, which is actually dial it in and pick the right picks. But the philosophy makes sense. I can see the game plan. I can see what they're trying to do with a team that is struggling and trying to rebuild. So they're putting together a game plan that I can support. Step two of the game plan, I might not support. I don't know what that is yet, though, until the draft comes out and we see who they select. So with Ben Simmons, all I'm asking for is a blueprint. Like, I need to see the road, the path. Let me see the path of improvement. I've seen it on defense. He has become arguably the best defender in basketball. I've seen it in some areas of growth. But to the level that we need it to be this many years into his career, that I can't justify. It hasn't been enough for where he is.
Well, one thing that I agree with you on is certain facets of his game. Now, one thing that I want Ben Simmons to do more so on a consistent basis is to drive to the net more and also get to the foul line more, because I think he's aggressive enough where he can drive to the basket more and not have as many problems. And also, like, when he gets fouled, I think his foul shooting, I mean, overall is improved slightly, but also not enough. So Are you of the same mindset where you kind of want Ben Simmons to drive to the net more and also get to the foul line more?
Definitely. Absolutely. That's something he needs to get stronger at. Now, you talked about his free throw shooting. Started at 56% in 2017. 60%, 62%, 64%. So each year, there has been improvement, but not enough improvement. And here's one thing that irks me more than anything in the world. There's people in the NBA, like Furkan Korkmaz, who think they have mismatches, even though they don't because they're not very talented players. But in his mind, he's like, I'm going to attack this matchup. Why? Because in his mind, whether it's right or wrong, in his mind, he thinks he could exploit that matchup, right? So, okay, that's what NBA players do. It's get your mismatch and attack. I just watched Ben Simmons have a mismatch with Matthew Dellavedova. This guy hasn't played basketball in over a year. Matthew Dellavedova.
Who?
Exactly. Well, we know who he is because of the LeBron factor, so we do know who, to give him a little bit of respect, but it's been quite some time since he was on the NBA floor, and his contract and all, it's crazy what he's making for the production that he is. Regardless, that's not what it's about. But it somewhat tells you, though, the difference in Matthew Dellavedova and Ben Simmons. He had that matchup multiple times, and he settled for a garbage little hook shot that made no sense. Ben, attack the mismatch. The amount of times I've seen him have a matchup that he could destroy blindfolded, and he elects to pick up his dribble, jump up off the ground, look around the perimeter, try and pass, that is no bueno to me. That is not okay.
Do you think he's afraid to get fouled more than anything else?
I don't think so, because why would you have those games where you get to the line 12, 14 times if you're afraid? Why would you be okay with it some nights, and then other nights you don't feel like attacking Matthew Dellavedova? Is that really going in his brain? It could be. Anything's on the table with Ben Simmons at this point, so maybe. But it's hard for me to believe that here he is 10, 12 times a game. Throughout some games, he's okay with it, and then the next game, he's going to the line two times. Why would you be okay with it one night and not okay with it the next night? You're either afraid or you're not afraid, right?
It's something really weird with his mentality, I guess.
That is what it is. It's all mental. It's not. We know the shooting is a flaw, but we've seen him dominate games without the shooting. That's all we ask for. If you dominate the way that you do at the top of your game without shooting the basketball, we're not complaining. We've seen you do it, but you don't do it enough. You do it on certain nights, and I have a problem with this. He seems to like the big matchups. He'll do it against LeBron. He'll do it against some of the other bigger opponents, which is good. That's better than, like, here, the alternative is, I do it against Dellavedova, I can't do it against LeBron. Or, I could do it against LeBron, I won't do it against Dellavedova. If I had to choose between the two, I'm taking the one where he would rather step up against LeBron.
Well, so
but
then
why isn't it both?
Maybe it's a factor of he's playing down to his opponent or playing up to his opponent. Because if he loves the LeBron matchup, that's playing up to your opponent, and he knows he has to step up there. But against Dellavedova, maybe he thinks he can take it easy right there. But that's why he's terrible. Not as aggressive there. That is terrible.
Yeah, I don't
see you should take advantage.
Right. Does Joel do that? When he sees a matchup, he laughs.
Oh, he just goes at it.
Yeah, he laughs. Oh, this is going to be a good night for me. I'm going to drop 40 and grab 20.
I mean, if there's another fight between him and Carl Anthony Towns, then... By the way, that was the first Sixers game I ever got highlights for.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Not a bad one.
Not certainly a memorable one, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. 610-632-0975 is the phone number to climb into the Ben Simmons conversation and also the Phillies conversation. They did get a win. They held the Braves to one hit. And this, I want to find exactly the finishing stat line for Zach Wheeler. I figured
taking ass and taking names.
Yeah, oh, don't do Gabe Kapler on me, please. Not today. He dominated on both sides of the ball. He really did. So this is the finishing stat line. 7 innings pitched, 1 hit, 0 runs, 0 earned runs, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts, went 2-for-3 with a double and 2 RBIs and 1 run scored. I feel like I'm dreaming. You think Zach Eflin can match that on tomorrow's effort?
No. Gut feeling? No.
You know, when I watched Aaron Nola yesterday put down a couple bunts, I kind of missed the pitchers doing a little bit of some dirty work up there. Like, all right, put that in play, baby. Let's see what you got. And watching Zach Wheeler do this, that almost raised it. I had goosebumps the whole time. We were talking about it during the pregame a little bit, during the pre-show area. We were talking about what we were going to do. We had Zach Wheeler up there. We were like, this is insane.
That big hit he had?
We had the goosebumps. Going the opposite way with it. Rhys Hoskins can't even do that. Oh, I didn't have to do that. Did I have to do that? Throw shots at other guys? Zach Wheeler's going the opposite way. Here I am throwing shade at, you know.
See, but that's Charlie Manuel's style. Just hit it.
Just hit it.
I mean, I know you're a huge analytics guy, but sometimes all you got to do is just hit the baseball.
I'm an analytic guy for sure, but there's a line.
Okay.
There's a line. I didn't have to take a shot at Rhys Hoskins. I've seen him go the other way. I have seen him go the other way, to be fair. Maybe I should have went Roman Quinn or something, because he can't really hit the baseball.
Then Rhys Hoskins, unfortunately, is still finding his game right now, for at least for this coming season, because he still has to find his game coming off of last season.
Yeah.
Which, what in God's name happened with that?
I don't know. But I did have a thought about him hitting in the two hole, that maybe my thoughts have changed a bit on this lineup when it comes to Rhys Hoskins, so... Maybe I'll tell you about that on the other side. 610-632-0975. This Phillies batting order and Rhys Hoskins. We talked about Ben Simmons and the role that he is. The expectations, maybe you don't need him to be what he once was. Is that the same with Rhys Hoskins? I'm Hunter Brody, and you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.